What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Sex and the City, the rewatch. And we are, of course, covering And Just Like That, season three. See, I almost forgot what season we are. Hi, Tane. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing well. Still sound a little funny. If you guys listen to me on Alto Call, you're already familiar with this voice. I've had this all week, and I'm just waiting for my cold cough combo to ride out. But hopefully I sound okay enough.
You do. You sound sexy, okay? How about that?
Thanks, Nana.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm like excited for this episode called Silent Mode. You know how last week this was your favorite, that was your favorite episode. This has been my favorite episode of the season.
Interesting.
I think everybody came to play. I think everybody brought their acting game, including Kristen Davis. Everybody was on point. The subject matter was a little triggering. Like it wasn't easy to watch, but I just really enjoyed it. And I think it was a balance of everything. Now, there's something in there we're going to talk about that was a question mark. But other than that, I think it really hit the mark for me.
Okay. I don't know if I liked it as much as you did. Yeah. Surprise, surprise. But I thought it was okay.
It's okay.
Yeah, just okay. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either. So, yeah.
I mean, I think the other thing also was like, we had all these theories going about who was dying and what happened. And I think Aid was listening to and was like, oh, it might be for Stanford. And then this episode, they're like, guys, no, it is Lisa's dad.
Yeah.
Not anybody that you're thinking, which is the controversial thing, I guess, about that. But before we get into that, I just wanted to read a comment that we got from someone last week from Dr. Butterscotch, because last week we asked, if you were attracted to someone, is that grounds to not hire them just so you don't put yourself in trouble? And the comment was like, if no one hired employees that were attracted, that they were attracted to, women would be at a severe disadvantage and likely rarely be hired. So it's up to people to be adults with self-control and keep it in their pants. And I could not agree more.
Do you know that was crazy? Like, guys, we didn't, Tane's like, oh, I have something to bring up before the episode. And I said, oh, so do I. And that's exactly what I was going to talk about as well. I love it. Like, I felt like it was a gentle call out and was well-deserved. Because I didn't think about that at all. It was very short-sighted, because obviously we're all being very subjective and only thinking about ourselves.
Yeah.
But if you flip the situation, and they're completely right. Like, how is it your fault if you're sexy and people find you attractive? Like, the onus shouldn't be on you, right? It's on them.
Yeah.
And I know we said, yes, Lisa would have been doing the right thing to like prevent temptation, especially if you could see what was happening. Mm-hmm. But that's not Marion's fault. That's up to Lisa to deal with. We're all adults, and sometimes you're going to be around temptation, and it's up to you to learn how to deal with it. You can't always just remove it from you, because that's not fair on the other person who's just minding their business.
Yeah.
We would never have had the same opinion if the roles were reversed.
Yeah.
And I feel rightfully called out. And it's weird that that was exactly what I wanted to talk about as well.
Sometimes realign. So yeah, shout out to Dr. Butterscotch for sending this in. And guys, this is why we like your comments, because nobody has it 100%. And then, you know, it's good to have things that, you know, bring you back, you know, not down to earth, but bring you back to a different point of view and just like give you a different point of view. So thank you.
Yes, I am with you. Okay, so yes, like Tane said, this episode was called Silent Mode, and it begins with Carrie having a mutton stew with her neighbor Duncan. She's clearly not enjoying it, guys, like choking it down. And he asks her to look over his first chapter of his Margaret Thatcher biography, and she agrees as long as he looks at her writing too, because in case you guys have forgotten, Carrie's supposedly working on a novel.
Honestly, when they started this scene, uh-huh, I thought they skipped something. I'm like, I'm sorry. Why are we having dinner together in the rain, like in his apartment? And I thought we missed something. Yes, they had dinner last time, but this is different. Clearly, he cooked for her. They sat in there. And it was this, I don't even know if it was, it wasn't romantic, but the rain always brings some kind of coziness
to
things. So I'm like, what did I miss? Am I watching the right episode? But then afterwards, I'm like, you know what? Maybe it does make sense. It's raining, they're neighbors, they're building a new friendship, and they're writers. So I'm gonna let this slide. I'm overthinking this.
Yeah. Aiden lets Carrie know that he's coming to visit for a week, since Wyatt will be away on a wilderness program, which he apparently signed up for himself. And guys, Carrie and her puns, you just have to roll with it at this moment. Also, Aiden's full of puns too, so these losers are clearly meant for each other.
But you said these losers.
Sorry, let me behave. No, I'm jumping ahead. Let me behave. These two lovely people clearly meant for each other. But is this all we've heard about Wyatt, like breaking a window? Nothing else? No update? He's just going away on a wilderness camp? I don't know.
I think time has passed. I think it's just weird that, yeah, they had the loose boundaries conversation about their relationship, but they didn't really talk about, okay, so where is Wyatt? And this could be a me problem, and maybe someone answered this, but I'm still unclear as to what's wrong with
us. Yeah.
I'm not laughing about it. I know something's wrong. I just don't know what the clear diagnosis is.
You know what? I don't think there's anything wrong per se. I think he's just a difficult child.
Wow.
I think he's got like emotional issues, it seems like. Like he clearly seems to have trouble like self-regulating and like managing his emotions. It didn't seem like, well, apart from his ADHD, which is like a real, you know, issue, there doesn't seem to be anything else that they've mentioned, like neurologically wrong or like physically wrong. It seems like he's a difficult child, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's what I was saying. Was like, so I don't know. And given the way their relationship works, where they don't talk about stuff, I've just decided to surrender and give in to this, whatever I'm just like that is doing. We just have to roll with it and stop trying to make sense of it. So I'm now focusing on like the odd little things that are happening in the background. Like when they were talking on the phone, I was already thinking, oh, wow, Aiden/John Corbet is balding. Like, I don't know if I've noticed that before. And then I see him putting drops in his head. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm not, you know, I was feeling bad. I was like, am I calling this man out? But no, it isn't. But you guys know, as usual, I'll drop the nuggets that I get from the official podcast where they just congratulate each other on the shitstorm that they're doing. But Michael Patrick King is like, you know, John Corbet came up with that. Like, whoa, wouldn't it be cool if he mimicked his accent and everything? But he was like, wouldn't it be cool if I put some Rogaine in my hair? and do that. And he was giving him all the congratulations, like, these actors, they just embody the role. I'm like, all right, this just drops. Okay. So
I was laughing because in my head I was like, not Aiden getting his sacred drop.
It's hard to get sacred drop if you're selling out.
I'm like, not Aiden's got the plug for the sacred drops, guys. So yeah, hit him up. He knows. But anyway, Miranda wakes up in Joy's bed with Joy's dog staring at her, both of them. I didn't write down their names.
Socrates
and Sappho. Sappho.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sappho and Socrates. I actually really do like those names for dog names, but yeah. Anyway, Miranda mentions to Joy that Seema may have finally found her apartment. And all I was thinking is like, so did Carrie kick her out like immediately? And she's been staying with Joy this whole time? She had nowhere else to go? I mean, she still has an apartment. I know there's a crazy person across, but hey, not my business. And Joy does make... Oh, continue.
That's what I was going to ask you. Was like, I was unclear. I was like, is she living with Joy? Because last we knew, the dogs were a problem. So how did they solve that? Or is she just visiting? Because later on in the episode, it seems like she was just visiting, but it felt like she was living.
She's living there. And Joy was like, oh, you can just stay here like forever or whatever. She's like, oh, she doesn't want to be that cliche, you know, of like, we just started dating and moved in already. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. And also, I don't know if the dogs were a problem. It's just that they kept whining, right, when they were trying to have sex.
That is a problem. That's why they didn't have sex.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so how did they solve that, especially since she's living there? But then the confusing part was maybe she's not living there because Joy was trying to kick her out.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Miranda's just giving homeless vibes, guys. Like, I just feel like for a grown woman, and so Miranda's not poor. You can't even get, like, even if you don't want to go back to your apartment, you can't do an Airbnb or something. I don't know. I'm just very
confused. She is Airbnb-ing.
She's not.
She's tired of it.
She's been a hobo. No, she hasn't. But yeah, I don't know. The whole living situation is just kind of strange. But she tells Joy that she'd love for her to meet Brady. And I really blanked out that Brady is Steve's last name. Like, I knew this, but I completely forgot. Because that's
how really?
About that. Yeah.
It's such a big deal.
Yeah, no. Such a long time ago.
Did you find this weird?
That she wants her to be Brady?
Yeah.
No, because she's clearly into Joy. And Brady's not a child. I don't think it's weird at all. Did you?
Yeah, I did. Because she hasn't even introduced them to her friends. Yeah. Like, and they just, we don't know the timeline, but to me, they just kind of just started. And yeah, you introduce them, but in the grand scheme of things or in the show, which the show, Brady is a secondary character. Yes, I get it. That's her child. But usually, I don't know. I think that I would be more, I've never, you know, I don't have kids and I've not dated to see how it goes. But in my mind, I think I will introduce to my friends, hey, what do you guys think? What do you do? Before I introduce to the kid. Yeah, Brady is not a child, but I thought the rule is you introduce to the child when it's something solid, not like by fleeting through emotions. If that was the case, everyone would introduce everyone immediately. Like, oh my God, I really like this person. Here it is, where it is. But I think the key for me was just the fact that she hadn't introduced her to her friends yet. And she was already introduced into Brady. I think that was my.
Okay. I do think it's strange that she hasn't met her friends because Miranda's friends are very close to her, clearly. Yeah. But also we find out that it's been like 2 months at least since the last episode, two episodes ago when they went on their first date. So they have been seeing each other for quite a few weeks. But I don't know, I didn't find it weird because Brady doesn't even live with her. Like I would find it weird if Brady was still like in school or he lived with Miranda. But he's very independent, clearly. So yeah, I didn't find it weird at all.
Yeah, again, my hang up is just Brady before the friends.
Yeah. So Charlotte runs into Bitsy. Bitsy's back, guys. Bitsy Von Mufflin, right? Who I think she looks great. Mm-hmm. I really do. Right outside Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Sorry, as an aside, do you think they paid for product placement?
That's a good question. They did not mention that on the official podcast, but I think even if they didn't, I don't know. I was about to say, like, it would be a realistic hospital for them to go to, but they could have made that vague.
Yes.
But this was very prominent.
It just really stuck out to me. So I haven't mentioned before because I don't like to talk about my personal life, but I used to work in radiation oncology. So obviously I know a lot about Sloan Kettering. And it just really jumped out to me, like, because they were standing right outside, like, prominent branding behind them. And then Bitsy made sure to specifically mention Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. I'm like, why is this giving product placement? It just made me feel a bit ill. But anyway, this is capitalism, isn't it? So.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Anyway, so Bitsy, like I said, she runs into Bitsy outside Sloan Kettering, and Charlotte lies that she's only there to volunteer because, of course, she doesn't want anybody to know that Harry has cancer. And she mentions that she'll see Bitsy at an influencer event for Tiffany's that she'll be attending as Carrie's plus one. But Bitsy is miffed when she realizes that she hasn't been invited, and Charlotte tries to save it, but not very well.
That was so funny. Bitsy on her own is an annoying character even since then. But they mentioned that because they were dealing with a heavy subject matter, they had to find balance and put some comedy in it. And the best way to do was Bitsy, and I think they did that very well. I think that Charlotte's denim dress was so flattering. I loved it so much, and it was so her.
She just looked great, like, this whole episode. And I don't know, Bitsy's the kind of character I love. Like, I know there's a word for them, I've forgotten, my theater days are long over, but I like those kind of recurring characters where it still feels true to the fabric of the whole you know, show, and they use her the way she should be used. But yeah, anyway, and for those of you who care, that denim dress is by Oscar De La Renta, because I did go and look it up.
Nice.
Anyway, so Seema, we see her playing sad music in the back of her
Diana Ross no
less. What'd you say?
Diana Ross no less. So dramatic.
Staring at, all she needed was rain just to really, like, staring out the window. Seema cracks me up, but she's not a serious human being. So anyway, she's really down in the dumps because she can no longer afford to keep her driver, Rocco, her beloved driver. The costs were apparently being covered by Pust and Patel, and she can't do it on her own. And she asked Rocco to salvage her personalized license plates, which are Seema NYC, guys, for her when he returns the car. Every day, okay, I know, like, maybe this hindsight and I'm being judgy, but I'm just like, you really quit like that with no plan?
She really believed in herself. She took a she bet on herself, and that doesn't always mean success.
And the things, I kind of get why she, like, quit, but it's just, it seems a bit petulant. But maybe it's also hindsight doing, like, giving me that opinion, I should say. But I'm just like, I don't know, it just seemed like a bit of throwing a tantrum, throwing your toys outside the pram, and it didn't work out for her. But anyway, I believe in her. I feel like she'll come bouncing back.
Yeah, I mean, it was a knee-jerk reaction. It is what it is, and it wasn't a well-thought-out plan. Like, she probably should have done this in phases. I know last week I said that when she was leaving and leaving the company and all that, I did not feel anything. Maybe it was the music, maybe it was everything, but I did feel sad for her when she parted with Rocco, because we've come to associate Seema with her driver. Like, she doesn't go anywhere without the driver. So saying, like, we're not going to see her in her brown Mercedes anymore, I don't know, that made me sad. And then the same way I noticed that, you know, it's so funny. Last week I'm like, Miranda only wears orange and blah, blah, blah. So of course this week she's not in orange. Then I noticed that Seema is always in brown.
Oh yeah, she loves her neutrals. She sure does. And she looks good in them too, have to say. Anyway, so Charlotte and Harry are discussing his treatment options between radiation and surgery, and he's contending with either long-term bowel dysfunction or long-term erectile dysfunction. Obviously, none of them fun choices. But Charlotte reminds him that they have to tell him the worst case scenario. And the doctor did say he has a 98% chance of successful treatment, which are really good odds. Mm-hmm. And Harry decides on surgery and reminds Charlotte how much he loves her. And again, this is, sorry, my radonk brain working, but I'm just like, you can decide on surgery, but it doesn't mean that you won't also have to do radiation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I thought it was weird since they went so much in detail that they didn't mention that. But hey, we'll see.
I just keep... Okay, I'm 85% that they're not going to kill Harry, mm-hmm. but I'm not getting a good feeling the way they are.
They keep going on, right?
Yeah, I'm just like, please, guys. Like, and it's not like I have faith in the writers because I don't know what they're doing, even though they do say they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I'm just, what is happening here? Where are we going with this? So,
can I give you my theory?
Yeah.
And I feel just praying that if they do go down this route, that they handle it well, because sorry, these writers, I don't trust them. One day they'll be fantastic, and then the next day I'll be like, are you guys the same people? But I feel like they may be setting it up for erectile dysfunction, just because
that's
just
their
over the whole, exactly, all over the show from the very beginning. Like, we always know that they've had a great love sex life, and even like what led for him to go get checked out was because he was obviously having trouble when they're having sex, mm-hmm. and it's such a big part of their marriage that I feel like maybe they're setting up for that to be an issue and how they handle it. And I hope that if that's the route they go, they do it well. But yeah, that's just my theory. I could be completely off base.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Best case scenario, he just goes through it and he's fine.
Yes.
He's exactly. Okay. But they just, there's just this level of dread every single time.
Yep. I'm with you. I feel like we're being set up for something awful.
Oh dear. Okay.
So Carrie's at Hot Fellas, where the line is out the door, mainly due to gross people ogling Giuseppe's package. So I hate that term package, which is why. Just so
well, what are your choices? His package, his dick.
I'm a dick person.
They're all. She said I'm a dick person. We know that.
Oh, wow. I mean, I'd just rather not talk about it at all, to be honest. So I don't cringe inside, but I don't like cock. Package, none of that. I was just like, please stop. Seema announces that she's done the impossible and found Miranda. Oh no, sorry, did I miss? Sorry, I completely missed a section, guys. Mm-hmm. I apologize. This was about Seema when she was returning. She was saying bye to Rocco. She was basically going to meet up with Miranda to show her an amazing apartment. Absolutely incredible, everything Miranda's looking for. And Seema says Miranda would definitely get it if she offers $150,000 over the asking. But Miranda says she refuses to play the game since Manhattan real estate is predatory enough and she's not doing all of that. And Seema says this ain't the fight to be doing fight the man. This ain't the time I said to do fight the man. Do you want an apartment or not? That's just how it is. Miranda refuses to bend. And then she also uses the excuse that she can hear a dog barking through the walls as evidence of the apartment's unsuitability. And Seema clearly has her work cut out for her.
Yeah. I loved this scene only mm-hmm. because for once we got a glimpse of the Miranda that we know. That is absolutely what she would do. I could yes. see her during her brownstone days when she was in her 30s, like, fuck that.
Yes.
I'm not paying that. I'm standing on my principles. The mm-hmm. man needs to come down. Even though she may be hypocritical in other ways, which we all are, but this was so great to see a glimpse of the Miranda that we know. And to clarify, she's looking to buy, not rent, yes. right?
Okay. So looking to buy, gotcha. That's what, this is what I'm saying, like, these people have money, so Miranda, why are you living like this? I need to stop, because even the apartment that she found herself in with the crazy neighbor, why did you wait so long? I don't get it. Like, there things, some things that just don't make sense to me. And also, can I say, so I feel like Miranda's harping on about Manhattan real estate, mm-hmm. but wasn't it a whole thing when she moved out to, was it Queens?
Brooklyn,
sorry. Mm. So this bit just seemed, it didn't flow for me.
Well, she didn't want to move to Brooklyn. That
no.
was Steve.
Yes.
So she wanted to, oh, sorry.
So no, I'm just saying, like, I find it weird that she's so insistent on, like, staying in Manhattan, but they're refusing to play the Manhattan game. It just seems a bit contradictory, especially when she's lived outside of Manhattan for years before, so she's not opposed to it.
She is. That's what I'm saying. So I understood what you were saying. I'm thinking that she's refusing to play the game is just Miranda being Miranda and doesn't realize that time has passed, but she is opposed to living outside. She only did that for Steve. She did not want to. She does not like it. And I think they touched on a little bit on the official podcast. They wanted to give her a place that was close to her job. Mm-hmm. And that was the area that it was, that she could just come out, go there and stuff like that, or something like that.
Which would work for her, especially since she's like, she can do what she wants, basically. She doesn't even have to worry about her child. So
yeah.
Okay, that's fair. Mm-hmm. That's fair. Mm-hmm. So yeah, again, going back, guys, sorry, don't know how I skipped that part. So yeah, they're at Hot Fellas and Seema announces that she's done the impossible and found Miranda another place. But Miranda's also unhappy about this one because it's pet free. And it cracks me up because Seema says, yeah, it's pet free. And Miranda goes, wait, what about dogs? And she said pet free. And I'm like, this is so typical of dog people because
exactly.
they're pets. Our pets and their children, and it's everyone has children. Children the same way that they do. But yeah, it just makes me laugh.
I know. That's what I was about to say. I was about to say, like, yeah, you know how dogs are basically like children here. But speaking of pets, we also got another comment about, you know, we talked about the cats sleeping on their heads, and just like Dr. Butterscratch is like, you get used to it. It's nice to have kitty snuggles. So, but now her cat just sits on her and screams in her face.
You know what? I love that for you guys. Not for me, but I love that for you.
But she's like, I don't understand why Carrie even has a cat, even though she seems surprised every time it's there. And I cackle so loud because it's true. Because
it's
every time
so real.
Shu comes so out, Carrie's like, oh, Shu. Yeah. Oh, darling, Shu. Oh, you're here.
You know what? So real. That is cracking me up. You could not have summed it up better. That Carrie's always surprised as to why this animal is in her house. But anyway, Shu's always chilling, so they are meant for each other. Mm-hmm. Miranda clearly asks that because she's thinking about Joy's dogs. And Seema makes it clear that it's either this condo or bidding over the asking price on the other one, like she said in the beginning. And then we then go to Lisa, who's working with Marion. They're editing when her phone rings. Apparently, it's been going off constantly, and it's her husband's campaign manager. And she jokes that she's about to commit the cardinal sin of mothers and put her phone on silent mode. When Marion says that, there are quite a lot of people that he'd love to put on silent mode, but Lisa's one of them. And, okay, maybe I'll ask what you think, but I felt like that line wasn't particularly delivered in a flirty way to me, but the look Lisa gives him reiterates the fact that, girl, you're in danger, because it looks
you're
like
in danger, girl.
Yeah, but I don't think Marion was flirting.
I can't tell. Marion seems to have a natural playful demeanor, but it could go either way. It's not a place where I can definitely say, oh, he doesn't want it, oh, that, because it's a case of maybe if she, this is fan fiction in my head, if she confesses and is like, oh, I have feelings for you, and he'd be like, you know what, I was trying to fight it too, I won't be surprised. But if it's like, whoa, where did we get there? I wouldn't be surprised either. So I cannot get a read on him.
Do you know what? Maybe I'm just projecting, because there's nothing worse than you just being nice to someone and they think you're hitting on them. And I'm just like, girl, I'll just be nice, enjoy your company, which is why I said I wouldn't put you on silent mode. I don't know. I just didn't get anything particularly flirty from it at all. But yeah, that's interesting what you said, that it could be taken either way.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, he could also mean we're working on an important project with a deadline. So why would I put you in silent mode if something important came up? Yeah. They did talk about the relationship that maybe they heard the question where it was like, why? Because Michael Patrick King is like, why are we messing with this relationship that is fine? Mm-hmm. And that is okay. So something they talk about a lot is a lot of these things that they write about are things that have happened in their own lives. And they're all going on about, oh, they've all had work crushes.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to put that in. And Samantha Irby, who's the Black writer on there, was like, she wanted to go further. And they're like, go further, like how? And she's like, she wanted them to have a kiss. I think that was vetoed. So that gives me hope that they're not going to cross the line.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't trust it. I don't know, because I don't know why they would give that away. Because the first thing every time you listen to the podcast is, if you haven't watched, don't spoil it. Go away. Come back when you've watched it. So I don't know. But they said they just wanted to make it realistic that you get to a certain point, and just because you're married doesn't mean you're dead and all that good stuff. And I was thinking about it. Like, I mean, I feel like I'm in a baby marriage. I don't have kids. I'm not in the routine. And maybe that's completely different. And they say it's like, oh, 7 year itch or anything. I'm not at that stage. I agree. I mean, just because you're married doesn't mean you don't know that other people are attractive. But I wondered, does everybody have that? Is that a given that you get to that point where, like, to the point where Lisa is flustered? You know about him, like, is that like, I'm want to say that it's not a given, that it doesn't happen to everybody, but I don't know either. They've been married for a long time,
yeah,
with kids and routines and gone through the ups and the downs and the all that stuff. So that's my question that I don't know if anyone has the answer to. Is that a given?
I'm not like married clearly, but I would never ever subscribe to the fact that anything is a given, to be honest with you. Yeah. I think it's like when people say you're unrealistic for expecting men to be faithful, they're like, all men. You know what I mean? I feel like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy if you're saying that this is something everyone will know. Why does it have to be something everyone will deal with? I feel like you're already putting parameters in place for like betrayal and it's like you're already preemptively giving excuses.
Yeah.
And I think that is harmful thought, harmful rhetoric. I feel like it's just giving society an excuse to misbehave by saying this is what everyone has to deal with. Yeah, so I will never be down for that. But again, I'm not married. Maybe I'm being unrealistic, but I will continue to be unrealistic because I don't think anyone should get into something going, oh, this will happen and I'll deal with it when it comes. Then what's the fucking point? You know? I don't know.
And then that's where I'm leaning towards, because in some ways it's like saying, like, are we like animals? Because again, the argument is not that you can't find other people attractive, but you are going to meet a lot of attractive people along the way. So does that mean every single attractive person you're like, ah.
Exactly.
And you're in and heat you for every single time.
Very attractive person as well. Like, I'm sure people have been hitting on her whole life, you know?
Yeah. So can't we control it? Like, why isn't, like, to me, it's like, it's just, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. People cheat on each other. I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying, like, from the writers that were saying, like, oh, this is something that will most definitely, I'm like, you can have a crush or think, oh, this person's attractive. But to the point where you start thinking things, I'm like, huh? I don't know if I
agree. Sorry to be shady. I feel like it's people who want to give themselves an excuse to misbehave in the future. They're the ones that set it up like this is something everyone goes through. No. Not necessarily. I'm sorry. They're just trying to give themselves an excuse. That's just my opinion. So, and could be very wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah. So Aiden is throwing pebbles at Carrie's window to announce his arrival, when he accidentally breaks Carrie's window. Clearly the Shore Boys and windows don't mix, guys. He just smashes the hell out of it. So Aiden is picking up the glass barehanded and apologizing profusely when he notices that Carrie isn't wearing any shoes around the damn glass. She tries to explain about Duncan, but all I'm thinking is, why don't you have house shoes, slippers, anything? They're like shards everywhere, and you're just standing there, not that far away. Your bare feet, God.
I want to go back to Aiden's alleged romantic throwing the pebbles. Like, honestly, this man could have hurt her.
Yeah.
Like, if she was standing there, if the glass had just been all over, like, what? How do you not measure? How big was this thing that he threw to her? And talking about the barefoot, you're right. Like, where's the Amazon thing? He even, oh, she returned it back to him or oh, that. Yeah, so and I know we said that she should have just taken off her shoes or anything. I think we also got a comment about that, saying that, you know, it's she has worn, she's been barefoot before or something. Oh, I have the wrong comment. But I felt mad that she was taking off her shoes for him. I don't know how to explain it, but...
For Duncan?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, like, I know that we said that she did... Oh, yeah, the comment was, like, carrying her shoes were annoying, but I'm siding with Carrie that if she wants to walk in her house with her shoes during the day, it's her right to do so. So the rant would have turned her off, but you'd have compromised with the rugs, but... It's her space and she can do what she wants. So, and I know we said, oh, she should just take it off and do, you know, what she wants to do. It's sanitary, all that stuff. But once I saw her just, oh, take off your shoes. Oh, be careful. I don't know. That annoyed me.
It did. But I feel like we kind of addressed that though. Like we can see both sides because it's your space. But mm-hmm. also Carrie was stomping up and down in very high heels.
Yeah.
On bare floors. I do think that's been an inconsiderate neighbor. Because even if Duncan wasn't keeping reverse hours from her, that would be really annoying. It's the same way as like and to me, it's just preventable. I think it's different if you have like a neighbor who has a screaming child, which is driving you insane.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that's not as preventable.
Yeah.
But you're in an apartment, and I just think she just got comfortable that no one lived below her. That she didn't even think. So now you actually have to think about people outside your home. And it was annoying her. But she, like, she's stomping all hours of the day and the night in, like, very high heels. And she wasn't walking gently. And the fact that your house isn't carpeted, I would be more with her if she had carpeted floors and he was still complaining. Because it's going to be one of those people you breathe wrong and they're going to complain. So... His delivery was wrong, but I don't think the message was.
I'm not saying it was rational. I wasn't expecting it myself. Once I just saw her all taking off her shoes, walking bare, I was just like, huh? Why?
She can get some funky house slippers. She'll be all right. Anyway, Carrie mentions that the glass cannot be replaced because it's really old glass. And he frustratedly bemoans that nothing is going his way. So I kind of undersold it. Like, Carrie's doing everything in her power to make him feel even worse. Really going on about how the glass puts rainbows on her floor. It's special glass from this era. And I'm just like, girl, okay, he already feels bad enough. But anyway, he tells Carrie that Wyatt tried to back out of his wilderness trip at the last minute at the airport. Like, he refused to get on the plane, but he and Kathy made him do it anyway. And Kathy broke down on their drive back home, asking what they did that was fucked up to have such a difficult child. Aiden is clearly going through it, and Carrie tries to comfort him, but he is not being very receptive.
I think he gave some good acting here. I think. Yeah.
I'm with you. Lisa and Marion are editing still. When Marion casually mentions the fact that he's married, Herbert comes to the office to tell Lisa why his campaign manager has been trying to reach her so badly. And he tells her that her dad had a stroke and sadly passed away. And Lisa's understandably devastated. And she calls Charlotte to vent about her anger at herself for having her phone on silent mode so she could work. And she feels that she could have had an opportunity to say goodbye. And as she's talking to Charlotte, she gets an email blast from her father's old theater manager, Lucille, inviting her to her own father's funeral and says this is the perfect reason for her to stop crying. And she's clearly channeled her sorrow into anger. Now, I don't know if you felt the same way about, this is going to sound really mean. I thought the acting was terrible for me when Herbert came to tell Lisa that her dad had passed. Because I'm like, this is supposed to be so heartrending, but everything about that scene to me felt really stiff and unnatural, and I didn't like it. And I don't know if it's just me.
I didn't feel that way. I actually thought like it was a good balance because remember she just found out that Marion was married. He just casually was like, oh, me and my wife were, and she's all flustered, like, oh, you're married? And he was like, yeah, I just like to keep my personal life separate. And the minute Herbert comes in looking all somber and stuff like that, she's like, oh, hi, this is Marion, married. That was funny to me. So I thought that was executed well, and I did not notice bad acting. I actually thought it
that's
was...
not the part I had an issue with, is how he told her that her dad had passed and the reaction. It just felt really weird to me and very stilted.
And yeah, it didn't
seem natural for a couple that have been together for, I guess, decades at this point. It just seemed really weird. But yeah.
Yeah. I
just different thoughts.
I was gonna say though, the jumpsuit that Lisa was wearing looked so comfortable, and I want 10 of those.
Is it the black and yellow one?
Yes.
It looked great. It actually looked vaguely African to me. I should have looked up who made it. Maybe I'll do as we're talking. But yeah, she looked fantastic.
It was really nice. And I just want to add that we've talked about Charlotte and Lisa's relationship, and I just love it even more because she's complaining that she couldn't have been there for her dad and she was working so much. And Charlotte was like, that was how he raised you to be. But we have to take a beat and discuss. The internet is going wild.
About
because
what?
In season one, there's a scene between Charlotte and Lisa where Lisa is telling Charlotte, I think it's when Big died. No, not when Big died. When something happened and they had a conversation, and Lisa says, like, that's how I felt when my dad died. I couldn't look at him with his fingers. And everyone is like, how did he die again? But here's the funny part. Her dad was in season two.
Yeah.
And there was not an uproar. And now there's an uproar because now it's been discovered. We always drag these writers for lazy writing. I don't know what is happening with them, with the script supervisors. So here on this podcast, we're just rolling with it because we can't keep talking about the same thing every day. I even went back, I listened to the podcast to see if they were going to address it, but clearly they recorded beforehand. So of course it's not going to be addressed. So I did my due diligence and went back all the way to the old episode where her dad showed up, which was season four.
Williams, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Season two, episode four, where he showed up, just to see if they talked about it, to be like, you know what? We know we said he was dead in episode one, but, you know, we couldn't miss the opportunity to have whatever. They did not touch it. They did not talk about it. They did not say anything. They just keep praising each other. So I didn't catch it until the internet told me. So maybe most people are like that, but they got to do better with this.
Yeah, they do, but not in their defense because they don't need defending. But I feel like things like this happen all the time, especially in like long running shows where they forget like groundwork they've laid, or they'll just pivot and expect us to go with it. Sometimes I feel like it's the byproduct of just TV, but that is exceptionally lazy. I'll give that. But also, there's no way to fix that. If she said her dad was dead, and then you decide there's literally nothing they could do to fix that, they literally have to go with, oh, she never said that, just pretend. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think what makes it worse is, again, granted, not everybody listens to the podcast, but the way they praise themselves, or the way they say, this has been in the works for like so long, we've been waiting to do this, and this is what's so great about writing, we think about this, we have this. So when you're there praising yourself, and the thing is with, and just like that, this is not a one-time thing, this is like all the time thing. So that's just what makes it. They're just lazy, you know. And for other things, we're just like, oh, suspend all disbelief, that's fine. But we ain't just like that. We're just like, guys, come on. What are we doing? So so that happened, and just wanted to address it because, man, it's been everywhere. There's so many edits out there, people just side by siding.
I haven't seen any of this. I've been avoiding the internet. But yeah, also Lisa's set is by Rihanna and Nina. They're very pricey, but they have cool clothes. But yeah, Charlotte interrupts Harry in the middle of a baseball game that he is watching very avidly, like he's really into it, to tell him about Lisa's dad passing away, even though the doctor said he was in good health. And Charlotte is freaking out because the doctors have also said Harry's in good health, cancer aside. And Harry's really not trying to hear all of this. He's in the middle of like a very important part of this baseball game. But since Charlotte won't let him watch it, he finally starts paying attention to her. And Harry says he's really sorry about Lisa's dad, but he really needs Charlotte's positive attitude right now and not her doom and gloom, which I get it. It's fair. But also, Charlotte, why were you trying to have a conversation at this very moment? I don't know.
Because Charlotte never makes sense. She's ruled by her emotions. Yeah. My little side take on this was just, I get that he wanted her to be his Pollyanna,
mm-hmm.
but is Charlotte not allowed to be sad? Because it feels like this whole journey, and that's the thing, she's not the one with cancer. So it's almost like she's deferring to Harry, but she's not been allowed to feel and not been allowed to feel all of her feelings, if that makes any sense. Like on one hand, don't tell anybody, don't say anything, and she's freaking out and he's like, everything's going to be fine. And then now she's still freaking out and he's telling her, I need you to be Pollyanna. But what if she doesn't want to be? You know?
It's not about Charlotte. Like, I know it sounds mean. Mm. I know it sounds mean. She asked him what he needs and he's told her what he needs. Sometimes you have to kind of swallow things that aren't working for you in servitude of the greater good. He's about to, like, he's finally decided on his treatment plan. He's telling her what he needs from her. Like, I know it sounds mean, but it's not about Charlotte right now.
Mm.
It's really not. And if I was Charlotte, I think it's really terrible that she has no one to talk to about this, which is what's making it worse, which is why she keeps going back to Harry. And it's clear that she's making him feel worse with her worry, which is exactly why he told her, I need you to be my Pollyanna. He needs her positivity, not the doom and gloom. And again, if I were in Charlotte's shoes, I would have booked an appointment with some kind of counselor, something to vent that way, at least until like things, he has this procedure and then she can finally like talk to her friends or whatever, because she's keeping everything inside. But it's not about Charlotte. Sometimes it's just not about you.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel. Sorry.
Yeah, I hear you. It is not about her. I completely get that. But at the end of the day, she's still a human being. And that's always been the weird line between not yet a caretaker, but the caretaker and the person who has it. Because again, which I acknowledge, at the end of the day, she's not the one that has the cancer. But I do think it's a big part that he doesn't want anyone to know. And she's doing this by herself. And I hear you about getting the counselor. Those are all the right things to do. But in the reality of it all, it's not always so clean and it doesn't always, you know, work that way. So that was just a thought I had. I mean, it could be not. I just thought, like, I felt some sympathy for Charlotte. Yes, it's not about her, but it's just a lot.
I don't think it's about not feeling sympathy. I've always felt sympathy for her, but she's clearly not making Harry feel any better. She's been falling apart, like, quietly for weeks, ever since they found out her whole behavior with the kids. And Harry's trying aggressively to be normal about everything. And my thing is, you can't ask someone, what do you need? And they tell you what they need, and you'll be like, oh, but not like that. Which is what I think she's doing. And I have all the sympathy for her. It's a horrible situation. But the thing is, this isn't going to last forever. You can keep it together until he has the surgery. And if you can't, find somebody that you can talk to, or at least tell Harry, like, hey, I know you don't want anyone to know, but I need to talk to someone so I can be a better partner for you. Can I at least tell Carrie or something? Like, I know, like, this person won't say anything. Or if that's not a possibility, I'm going to go speak to, like, a therapist, counselor, whatever. I just feel like it doesn't all have to be one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. But Carrie is trying to get Aiden to come to bed, but he's consumed with trying to find a replacement for her window, like looking up all kinds of sources. And he suggested drive 2.5 hours to Scranton, Pennsylvania, to look at a possible option. And she says, I'm not trying to do all of that. And he should just come to bed. And this is Carrie's idea of being flirtatious and sexy. She's clearly trying to get him to come to bed so they can have sex. But I don't know if he ever did come to bed, but it just cuts to the morning and she goes to check in on him, and he's left her a post-it note that he's gone to Scranton, Pennsylvania anyway to check the window. When I saw the poster, I'm just like, I wonder if Carrie's triggered by posting.
Yeah.
Flashbacks every time she sees it. So, yeah. He's consumed with finding this replacement window. And I just keep thinking, if you hadn't kept going on and on about how special this window was, maybe we wouldn't be here. But anyway. She attends the Tiffany influencer event with Charlotte. And she catches her up on the whole window situation. And we also find out, like, it's been 2 months since she last saw him. So, again, this helps to know how much time has passed. And I wanted to ask you, do you just get to a certain age and start saying making love? Because I feel like that wasn't part of Carrie's vocabulary before, was it? Because she talks about how she was trying to get Aiden to, like, she wanted to make love with him, but he didn't come back to bed. It was just an aside.
I'm trying to remember. Charlotte, definitely.
Yes, Charlotte.
But Carrie, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's so funny. The older I get, making love sounds weird to me.
The older you get, that's always been the weirdest thing to me. I'm sorry. I've always hated that term. Hated it from day one. Yeah, I don't know. It just dropped out of me. Because I do hate that term. I was just like, when did she start saying that?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I was just wondering if people just change their vocabulary the older they get. Charlotte gets emotional about how fragile everything is, and she tells Carrie about Lisa's dad. But Bitsy's arrival at the event interrupts anything else she was going to say about the fragility of life. And Bitsy says she was invited after all, and her invitation went to spam. And Charlotte once again puts her foot in it by saying she'll see Bitsy at the Townsend boat party, which is yet another event Bitsy wasn't invited to, which made me laugh because I'm just like, girl, stop. You just got saved. Have you ever done that before? It feels so awful.
No.
Oh, I have. We're just like, and then you're literally sitting there like scrambling like, shit, how do I save? When you realize somebody wasn't invited, you're like, crap. But yeah, it just made me laugh. Also, I love, this was my favorite dress, by the way, that Charlotte wore. I thought it was gorgeous. The blue and white dress. Yeah, she looked great.
Yeah.
So Lisa meets up with Lucille, her father's theater manager, and she's being played by Jennifer Lewis. Miss Kiefer to herself. I was so happy to see her. I love her. And this was one of my favorite scenes of the whole episode. Because she hilariously, very pointedly compliments Lisa's purse, which is a Fendi purse, by the way. She's like, I like your purse. And then she's like, do you like my purse? It's Michael Kors. And she like very pointedly puts it in the middle of the table. And it made me laugh because I feel like, for me, it felt very true to life. Mm. Did they say anything in a podcast about that scene?
No.
It had me cracking up.
I think they were just talking in general about the way the character was. As far as I was concerned, the way they always praise everything, I don't think that they praise Jennifer Lewis enough for me. So that was it. I just kept wondering why she was dressed like she was in Shaft. I was like, she not hot. It's the weather.
I just love her. I just feel like she's one of those characters or actors, I should say, that just always gives an injection of energy into anything that she's in. And I thought she did a great job, and I was just really happy to see her. But yeah, that Michael Kors line killed me because I was just like, someone is in the writing room being shady AF. And I But yeah, so Lisa gets right down to it and asks Lucille why she took it upon herself to organize his funeral. And Lisa says she was used to Lisa's dad saying not to bother her with anything over the last 20 years since she's always so busy. So she applied the same logic to his funeral. When I say Lisa is better than me, this whole episode, I just felt like she was chopping disrespect left, right. But she held it together so well for me because I feel like I would have lunged across the table and scratched her eyes out. Because what do you mean? It's my father. But yeah.
I'm just thinking this through. Yeah, I was her dad. And I was mad when I saw it come up. But then the more they spoke about it,
and how she wasn't necessarily there, not through any fault of hers. Life is busy and things that all that. Is there a point to be made, or it doesn't matter? The title supersedes.
No, but it does matter, because Lucille's clearly trying to hurt her, saying like, I didn't involve you because you were never around anyway. Like, even when he was alive, he'd always say not to bother you because you're too busy, so why would I change now?
Yeah, I mean, she should have told her about the don't send an invite if you're not there. Yeah,
and I'm like, she never even, literally this was the same day she found out her dad died.
Yeah,
did she call Lisa to say my condolences, or this is what we're doing in his last moments? Literally all you do is send a fucking email blast, which has probably gone out to hundreds of people, about his home going. No input, nothing. Who told you to do that?
Yeah,
which I'd be like, I know you're busy, I'm gonna organize everything. I don't know, I just thought it was so disrespectful.
Yeah, I agree with that. Just to clarify, so she, what was her name again? She had like Lucille Highwater. Lucille was in a romantic relationship with the dad. I kept going back and forth on that.
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe she is just one of those that she wanted to be in a romantic relationship with him, so was doing everything for him, but not necessarily they were. It's hard to. I think not more the point that she's the one who'd been around for the last 20 years, you know?
Oh, I know. Just as an aside, because on the official podcast, they were going back and forth, and then one writer was like, oh, I always have a backstory. In my backstory, she had an affair. They had dated before, then they had an affair, and I'm like, this is not helping me. I still don't know if this is supposed to be a romantic relationship or it was a one-sided thing where they spent a lot of time together and she had the work crush on him. So I still don't.
If this was my headcanon, so my fan fiction is, you know, like Lisa's family is that very, like, you know, that kind of prestigious African-American kind of family.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably did have an affair with Lucille while he was married to her mom, because Lucille's the kind of woman that will absolutely coddle his ego, make him feel super powerful, like the most important person, when his wife was also successful in her own right. So in his pettiness, this is entirely my headcanon, but that's the vibe I was getting. Like Lucille, like he was never going to leave his wife for Lucille. Ever. Yeah. Men like that never do, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a coddling. Like, she makes him feel more of a man, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, we are all writing fan fiction at this moment. But hey, it is. So Miranda and Joy are waiting for Brady to turn up. They're at a restaurant. And Joy gives Miranda a heads up that people's kids tend not to like her. And she casually mentions that's the reason she's never had a girlfriend with kids before. And Miranda's, of course, delighted that Joy referred to her as her girlfriend. Brady arrives and immediately hits it off with Joy's dogs, and this endears him to Joy. I thought that was such a cute scene. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. It was nice.
Yeah. Lucille and Lisa finally get on the same page that holding his homegoing at the theater is what he would have wanted. But Lisa stresses that it has to be simple and respectful. But of course, Lucille can't help get a dig in that Lisa has a lot of opinions for somebody who was too busy to see her dad on his final day. Oof. When I say Lisa is better than me, because she would have had a hot slap coming towards her if that was me. But anyway, but even Lucille immediately recognizes that she was out of line and says that the theater and Lisa's dad were everything to her. So yeah, she's obviously grieving. Mm-hmm. And taken out on Lisa, but that's no excuse. That's his daughter. I don't care, you know? So rude. Aiden is back from his glass finding.
Glass hunt.
I know, right? And is having a moment because he realizes that nothing will replace the original window. And Carrie tells him that it's not that deep and he needs to stop being weird when he confesses to her that he slept with Kathy.
I gasped.
So did I. I was like, I know you're fucking lying. Like, oh my God. Anyway, let me finish that we can discuss. So it happened after the airport freakout with Wyatt, and he apologizes and says he thinks they were trying to comfort each other. And Carrie is upset not upset enough for me, but anyway, but says it sounds odd, but she thinks she understands. Like, Aiden says he's really sorry for betraying her, and then they finally have the conversation that we've been waiting for about this 5-year arrangement that they were talking about. And Aiden apparently expected Carrie not to sleep with anybody else during the 5 years. And Carrie said, well, that wasn't her understanding of it. And Carrie says she understands about Aiden sleeping with Kathy, but she's having a harder time understanding why they have not had the discussion about their arrangement till now. Girl, get in line. So Aiden is upset about the thought of Carrie wanting to sleep with anybody else. I hate him. And Carrie says she only wants to sleep with him. I hate them both. And then we then cut to them having sex. Carrie with her bra on, as always, in homage to Tane. So
please, thanks, Carrie.
Tell me your thoughts, please. I need to hear it.
I don't know what to do anymore. I've been beaten by these writers because I don't. We've said this relationship is absurd. But for Carrie to just roll over and be like, I get it. It's okay. And then the fact that you haven't, you're more upset about the fact that you haven't had the conversation. I mean, we are now justified. We have clarification that they did not clarify what their boundaries were after the whole thing that happened. But I can't get with the program, even for Carrie, being okay with it. Not just, you know, I need some time to think about this. Because the thing is, even if she understands that he slept with someone throughout the whole time, he slept with Kathy. That is a big deal. That is a big deal that he slept with Kathy, not just anybody, because Kathy's not going anywhere. Kathy is always going to be there. So the next Wyatt freak out, are we going to console each other with each other's genitals? Like,
and now, am I supposed to sit at family gatherings? No, yeah. You fucked my boyfriend. Yeah. Like, Carrie, what are you doing? I feel like someone needs to give her a shake. I'm praying that if I was ever in this relationship like this, my friends would tell me to give my head a wobble. Yeah, what the hell are you doing?
If they do that, she's not going to listen. She told Miranda, because I feel like even if Miranda wanted to, she's like, can you cool it on the quips? I don't want to hear it. And then the other part that's a lie is her saying, were you expecting me not to sleep with anyone for the 5 years? That is what you were doing, ma'am.
Yes.
You were not looking at anybody. You were not dating anybody. You were trying to be faithful to him. So why are we now trying to flip it? Like,
you have told us that you're in a relationship, right?
Yeah.
And you're fine with not, we're seeing each other like sporadically for 5 years until his son, even though this 5 years we've said is arbitrary, because he used to say, is he going to be magically okay in 5 years? Like, what the hell? This is so absurd.
Don't come around and say it like you were not going to wait. That is exactly what you were trying to do. You staged a work trip so you could have lunch with him and do all of the things. So, you know, we keep talking about how they're regressing Miranda, and now I don't even know what they're doing with Carrie. And then for Sarah Jessica Parker to do interviews and be like, oh, a man does all these things and no one has a problem, and I do this and everyone has a, because this is absurd. This is like next level. Did you have a lobotomy? Like, who even are you? Like, even for Carrie, this is too
much. I think this is what made me so disappointed, because Carrie's always been Carrie. We know who she is, but she just seems so, like, centered in herself. You know, someone who's, like, grown and is so comfortable with who they are, not unsure at all about certain things. She has grown, and I'm just like, I can't believe we're back here again. And what is so special about this man that you are literally just going to swallow this disrespect? How can that, how can you be like, oh, I understand, which sure, like, what are you saying, Carrie? So are you gonna be okay with this for the rest of your life? And yes, it's not gonna be a one-time thing. I don't care what you say. If it's happened once before, so anytime someone's feeling down and sad, that could also happen again. These two are they're both in relationships, both of them. They're cheating on not just you, that guy whose name I've already forgotten. Kathy's always been also in a long-term partnership. This is so disrespectful. And if you're going to continue to be with this man, you're going to see Kathy. She's going to look you in the face. This is a woman who called you out of the blue to do her a favor, and then she slept with Aiden, that she knows you're dating, knows that this man's probably in love with you from even before the... I don't know. I just feel like there's so many layers to this that you cannot tell me this was just something that happened. And her reaction is so disappointing to me. I'm not saying you have to scream and shout, because I'm not that kind of person either. But the fact to say you understand.
And like, then have sex with him?
Yeah. Like, this is, I was so disappointed. What did they say in the podcast? Is there anything that will make me feel better about this?
No. I think they have to underline with a red pen that he slept with Kathy. I also understand that they can't make him sleep with anybody else. It makes sense that if he's going to sleep with someone, it's going to be Kathy. But I don't think... The podcast, what I remember was they were congratulating Carrie for growth. That old Carrie would have been this, but she was so mature about it and she got through it. And I'm like, I think I switched off at that point.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, there's nothing that I'm going to hear right now. It's just, we're not going to praise her for being calm because she is getting the short end of, you know what? She's not getting any stick in this relationship. She just keeps eating dust. Oh, and I think Michael Patrick King was saying something like, the audience has been thinking and expecting Carrie, like, what is Carrie going to do to fuck this up? Because she's the one that's got, no, we are not thinking that, because that was many years ago. Yes. We're actually thinking that Aiden is trying to get his revenge, even though I don't necessarily think that, but if it's more likely, it'll be him. But the whole thing is like, I'm asking again what I asked last week. What is the end goal of this relationship? What are you guys trying to, like, what is all this turmoil for? Why is Carrie doing all this and getting nothing in return? Like, it's not making sense.
Exactly. And Aiden is not that special. I'm so sorry. And Carrie, if just being in a relationship is the goal, there are plenty of people that want to be in a relationship with you. Like, relax. It's never that deep. Like, you're better off by yourself than in this fucked up situation. I'm so disappointed in her. I've been hating him, so I don't even have any room to be disappointed in him. He's just showing his true colors. But yeah, and he still got rewarded for it after all of that. Boo fucking who? Like, no. I'm sorry. I'm still heated thinking about it. Need to calm down. Anyway, so Lisa and her family arrive at the funeral. Lisa looking fabulous with her mini me. And Lucille informs her that she will only have 3 minutes to speak again at her own father's funeral. The gang and Aiden show up for the funeral. Miranda informs Seema that she's willing to put in an offer for the first apartment after all, because her so-called morals have gone out of the window because of her relationship with Joy. Do you know what? I know this term doesn't apply because Joy is a woman, but Miranda's really a man clown. Sorry to say.
Well, you can say lady clown.
Yeah, lady clown. Because she really does the most for a relationship. I'm like, Miranda, you are literally, you're a pick me. This is so embarrassing. Because it was the same with Che. I feel like she changed her whole personality for them. And now with Joy, all these morals that you've held on to, she's like, okay, whatever, it doesn't matter. Because anything for my girlfriend, I'm just like, Miranda, stop.
Of 2 months. Yeah. You're going to make a lifelong decision on someone. Because let's talk about, you know, going way back to when she woke up in her bedroom. I know she was kidding. And I know, like, on my reality shows, they like to say, like, oh, it's British humor and all that stuff. She was literally, in many different ways, saying, get out of my house. Like, she was just like,
you think, okay. She was, I didn't get that vibe from her.
She was like, she was kidding, but at some point when you're saying it multiple times, all the jokes are leading to, okay, now you gotta go. Yeah, you gotta go. And I think they talked about it in the official podcast too, about it was loving, but you know those kind of jokes where you say it's loving and you're, that's ribbing each other, but you're like, all right, it's, we got it. That's enough. So, and I just don't know if Joy would do the same thing. Like, upend your whole life and where you're going to stay for a lifetime, whether this works or not, hinging that on. And for that price, too.
I don't know.
How about you fit into whatever I buy?
Thank you. And she folded so quickly. I'm just like, damn, okay. Anyway. So Aiden is in a medium-sized suit, as his usual big and tall store has shut down. I really hope misfortune follows him the rest of his days. But anyway, he accidentally splits his pants as he sits down. So, yeah.
Isn't that stupid?
in all of New York. There's no other big and tall. We couldn't
it's
Google.
Not abnormally tall either. He's just very tall. Do you know what I mean? So like just 6'8", 6'9", relax.
In all of New York, we couldn't find anything. Even when he carries money. I don't know what Aiden's wealth is compared to, he's not starving for money.
Not at all. Not even a fraction of starving for money.
That's kind of crazy that, again, you couldn't find
there's pants, a lot of money in furniture, and he lives in a, he's got, like, I don't think he's struggling for money at all. Yeah. And doesn't he still own half that bar with Steve? No?
We don't know, because the writers, you know? We don't know. Are they dead? Is Steve alive? We don't know. They've been resurrected.
So Lucille begins the funeral with a number from Pippin, and it's all downhill from there. It's exactly as theatrical as Lisa didn't want it to be. What were you going to say, Tane?
You don't hire Jennifer Lewis to play a demure character. Of there was no way it wasn't going to be a whole Lion King Broadway production.
And if, was it for Color Girls that she had?
Yes. With the, yes.
I'm just like, this is exactly. She did the complete opposite, guys, of what Lisa says she wanted. Is nothing demure. Nothing cutesy about it. So anyway, Lisa gives a tearful speech and mentions how she wasn't there for him in the end. Clearly, that's what she's been struggling the most with about her dad's death, is how she felt like she wasn't there. And she's finding it difficult to continue, but Herbert kindly steps in to finish her speech for her. And even Herbert's mom, who we all know is just a constant bitch to Lisa, she comforts Lisa by telling her that if you're not there when a loved one passes, it means they didn't want you there. Their spirit didn't want you there. They want you to remember them the way they were and not in their final hour. And then she then gives her a handkerchief to wipe her tears. And that was such a lovely thing to say and do.
And then she put her bitchiness too.
Like, of course.
Launder it and not throw it in the wash.
You are, duh. And the episode ends with Aiden kissing a sleeping Carrie goodbye. As she voiceovers, despite the shatter, the woman knew that the break wasn't fatal. With time and care, it will soon be repaired because the ties that bound them were stronger than any spun glass. Girl, please. Aiden says he'll call her when he gets home, and Carrie replies, "You're home." And on his way out, Aiden stops in the kitchen, I guess, to make a coffee. And he runs into Duncan, who's come off to drop off the chapter of the book, as he promised Carrie. And Aiden promises that he'll make sure that Carrie will get it. And you see Carrie, like, waking up, and he's left the chapter on her dining table for her. This scene was really weird to me and didn't make any sense. Can you please elucidate?
She said, please, like, I know. This is my my interpretation was, like, Aiden had the audacity to feel threatened, especially, I guess, now that he realizes, wait, what is their boundary now? Can they sleep with each other?
No one knows. Nobody knows. Surprise, surprise.
So, especially now that maybe it dawned on him, maybe he forgot who the fuck Carrie Bradshaw was, but you, you're blessed. But realizing that, wait, this man is just downstairs, because she had mentioned him. I guess he just didn't think that this was a man that's also, I think, as they said on the podcast, Michael Patrick King was like, Aiden, who's 6'2", 6'4", whatever, and then Duncan, who's also 6'4", and then they look at each other eye to eye, both handsome men. And I'm like, well, this is a dick measuring contest only for Aiden, because he had that look in his face like, oh, shit. What is happening here? But you don't get to sleep with your ex-wife and say all of that and then now start feeling threatened. And then Carrie, who is forever catering to Aiden's whims and needs and stuff, is probably like, oh, how did this get here? Did they run into each other? Oh my God, does Aiden feel some type of way? Because all she does now is worry about him. I don't understand.
Okay, that's it. Carrie's, oh God, she needs to stand up. I'm like, after everything Big put you through, and I thought you changed, I can't believe you're doing this again, but whatever. Carrie runs into Charlotte at Walgreens, who is discreetly trying to buy Depends for Harry's upcoming surgery. And Charlotte, poor Charlotte, finally breaks down and tells Carrie about Harry's cancer. And Carrie promises to be Charlotte's secret keeper and urges her to talk to her about all her worries, no matter how big or small. And Charlotte says she can't stop thinking about how Harry's going to die. And she finally lets it all out and sobs in Harry's arms. And that's how the episode ends. Such a touching scene.
It was touching. I did like, really, Charlotte, if you do go to Brooklyn, nobody goes there. But not go to Carrie's neighborhood.
Or do you know what she could do? Instacart exists. Like, I'm like, what the heck? You don't have to go and find them yourself. If you're worried about being seen, you could get it delivered. Like, what do you mean? But whatever. Hey, maybe things are different.
Yeah, it was such a touching scene. A couple of things that also stood out to me. At first, they kept showing Carrie and the Tums. What I didn't get what yeah. that was about. And I was like, wait, is she going to get sick? But they're not going to do that. And I think on the podcast, they were trying to make it some symbolism thing that she knew something was afoot and it was from the mutton and maybe more and anxiety. But
no.
And then for the funeral, I kept wondering, is the third child of LTW and Herbert, is he here?
Do you know, I saw a brief glimpse of him because I was actually looking for him this time because I still think.
So yeah.
But he lied to me. But he was there. It was very brief.
Yeah. So here's my thing. I saw him briefly. I kept looking at this same seat and I don't know if it was a continuity error. But if you look one time, he's not there. Then you look another scene, he's there. And I'm just, what are these people doing? And why are we not having an explanation as to why he's the disappearing ghost of somebody? This is weird.
This is people that forgot her dad was already dead. So we're asking entirely too much. So let's be for real.
And my final thing was like, I was scanning the crowd of the people at the funerals. And I'm like, well, do we have thoughts on LTW and Herbert having only white friends?
No comment.
Because
so they don't strike me as the kind of people that would only have white friends, which again, exactly. It's a writing thing. Because of the kind of family they both come from, they will definitely be very in tune with their blackness. They have a certain type of friend circle for sure.
Yes. Yeah. So that's when I saw it. I was like, this doesn't sound... I know they have Samantha Irby, but I don't want to speak out of turn like she's the only... black writer, but maybe she's the at her level. I do think she's the only one, but you know, that's a lot of onus to put on somebody. But literally, I guess I
was about to say that's a lot to put on one person. Everyone should be doing better, to be honest.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So I just looked at it and scanned the crowd, and I'm just like, you know, these are the little things that you would notice. It's like it just because now in the times that we live in, even when who is the latest celebrity that maybe they had the lunch and it was just everybody, it was just, you know, their white friends,
yeah,
and things like that. For someone like LTW, who her dad was very into the community, they're very. We've had an episode where they both talked about, you know, the black community, and even though it was on different ways or different paths of doing that, it just seems like you said, it'll be something that they'll be conscious of. But
100%, I'm with you, and I again point that to weakness in writing. Unfortunately,
we gonna drag these writers.
Did you have any other thoughts?
No, that was it.
Okay. Will you please tell the people where they can find us?
Yes, guys. You can find us on The Rewatch times 2. That's TheRewatchX2 on Instagram and on Twitter. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can just add @gmail.com. We welcome all your comments and your questions. And our DMs are in the comment section.
And please give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye, guys.